Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanz on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, October 23rd, 2020. A group of angry young men attack international organizations in Upper Nile State.
The evening, they just making a portrait and then they went to the media, were out and then they burned. They were out yesterday around 6:45, and then when police operation went there, they just take a pickup of the car, and then they jump in, and then they ran out from the town.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some angry young men in Reng County of Upper Nile State went on rampage Thursday evening, setting fire on a store belonging to Midair, an international aid agency operating in Reng. The angry young men say two humanitarian organizations operating in Reng have done very little in employing locals. The Director of Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Reng says all employees of Midair and World Vision International have been evacuated to a UN compound for protection. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Eyewitnesses say hundreds of youths stormed the Midair office in Reng, burning down its warehouse late Thursday after negotiations over employment of locals fell apart. Reng teacher Peter Baraj Biar says when aid youths did not agree with directives of local authorities allowing Midair and World Vision to resume operations, they decided to attack the aid agency's facilities.
Around 6:55 in the evening, they just making a portrait and then they went to the media warehouse and then they burned. They were out yesterday around 6:45. And then when police operation went there, they just take a pickup of the car and then they jump in and then they run out from the town.
Biar says calm has returned to the area today for the most part as security forces deployed to Reng are protecting the offices of both Midair and World Vision.
Now the situation in Reng now is now making just a calm, but some of the youth now, they hide themselves. There's no another protest outside. But I don't know what will be the action from the NGOs at this moment because this is now making them a bundle loss for them. These are all the medicine which are there for nutrition kits. They are all burned. And then some of the car too, they are all destroyed.
2 weeks ago, the youth in Reng issued a letter accusing World Vision and Midair of not hiring local citizens and ordered both groups to cease operations and leave the area. They also demanded the two organizations leave behind all valuable assets. Ben Keng Ajak Pal, the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission Director in Reng, confirmed a Midair warehouse was burned to the ground and that the government is now protecting the offices of both organizations. He says area youths want to be employed.
They demand their own children to have a job within the organization. That's only their demand.
World Vision Communications Manager Cecile LaGuardia says her organization has evacuated all their staff and temporarily suspended activities to allow negotiations with the youth before they are able to once again deliver services to the most needy.
The World Vision staff are fine, they are okay. But currently, you know that the discussion on the issue is still ongoing, and World Vision's concern is really to be able to do its work, knowing that there are, like in Reng, we're supporting over 18,000 people. So hopefully, you know, when there are some certainties in the negotiation.
The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in South Sudan issued a statement today condemning the incident. Mohamed Ayoya, acting UN OCHA humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan, says tensions between local youth and humanitarian organizations have been building in Reng for weeks. On 12 October, Ayoya says the Reng Youth Association demanded that humanitarian organizations reassign jobs from current staff from certain backgrounds to local people. When their demands were not met, the youth insisted all humanitarian activities be suspended and aid workers leave Reng immediately.
Everyone needs to know that humanitarian workers in Upper Nile are there to deliver life-saving assistance to the most vulnerable people, including women, children, and older persons. So anything being done to intimidate them or force them to leave or suspend their activities is not going to be helpful in terms of providing the much-needed assistance to the most vulnerable people, and is just unacceptable for us.
Ayoya says all aid workers in the affected organizations have been evacuated to a safer location. He says UN OCHA is working with local and national authorities as well as other aid agencies to find a solution to the matter. MedAir declined to comment on the record of the incident, saying it is concerned about the safety of its staff at the moment. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Khartoum, where some political parties in Sudan have opposed suggestions by the U.S. government to encourage authorities in Khartoum to normalize relations with Israel. Leaders from the Umma Party are threatening to pull out of the transitional government should Sudan move forward with plans to normalize relations with Israel. The Umma Party also vowed to challenge the government's decision in the Constitutional Court. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Sudanese political parties say the transitional government does not have the power to make major decisions on Sudan foreign relations with any nation, including Israel, during the transitional period. Speaking to this program in Khartoum, Ahmed Abdul Wahab, an advocate and a member of the Umma National Party, led by Sadiq al-Mahdi, says his party will not support any normalization of relations with Israel because his party does not even recognize Israel as a country. He says the transitional government should avoid taking what he calls the risks of engaging any sort of relations with Israel. He says his party cannot compromise on its fundamental principles, which regard Israel as a Zionist entity, which is trying to occupy the land of Palestinians.
The issue is that we have a historic stance built on ethics and principles, and it's the same way Sudanese revolution came into service. Our revolution is built on ethics and principles. Our stance towards Israel is based on these principles, and we cannot change that overnight. And the question is not about benefits. Even though we lose all what we have, we will never change our principles.
Abdul Wahab says, should Sudan's transitional government decide to normalize relations with Israel, the Umma Party would withdraw its support from the government and the Coalition of Forces for Freedom and Change. He says, if need be, the Umma Party could go to the Constitutional Court and challenge the government's decision.
We are capable of using this law through a popular support from our citizens to reject this decision. We will never allow any normalization with Israel. They can't even be called a nation because geographically they don't exist.
Other political parties opposed to the normalizing relations with Israel include the Sudanese Communist Party, the Arab Socialist Baath Party, and the Justice and Equality Movement. A faction of the Umma Party led by Mubarak al-Fadil says Sudan as a sovereign state has a right to normalize any ties with any country so long as it benefits both countries. Al-Fadil says he believes normalizing relations with Israel at this crucial time is necessary. Stephen Gado Arnou, a Sudanese PhD student specializing in peace, conflict and security at the United States International University of Africa, says it is in the interest of both Sudan and Israel to normalize relations and come together for a better future that benefits both countries. He notes some Arab countries have already normalized relations with Israel.
Sudan has a number of its allies, such as Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and United Arab Emirates, who are supporters of this deal of the century. So it is automatically not a question of why, but how can Sudan make use of this political event?
Arnou says it is also in the interest of the Israeli people to begin seeking new relations in the region.
And it is actually in the interest of Israel to basically engage Sudan as a bastion of resistance and hostility as of 1967 and try to forge a good relationship with this country.
For months, Trump's administration officials have been holding talks with diplomats in the region, trying to encourage several countries to normalize relations with Israel. For VOA News, I am Michael Atiit in Khartoum.
The United Nations warns of a looming health crisis in Sudan following historic floods, which have created conditions for deadly insect-transmitted diseases to breed. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Some 875,000 people across Sudan are affected by torrential rains and floods, which have caused widespread damage to homes, crops, and livelihoods. The floods have left behind stagnant water pools, which are perfect breeding grounds for mosquitoes. And the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs warns that more than 4.5 million people are at risk of mosquito-transmitted diseases, such as malaria, chikungunya, and viral hemorrhagic fevers, or VHF. Sudan's Federal Ministry of Health has already reported increasing numbers of suspected VHF cases, which include dengue, yellow fever, and Rift Valley fever. The agency reports 2,226 cases, most in northern state, including 56 deaths. Jens Laerke, a spokesman for the UN Humanitarian Affairs Office, says there also is an outbreak of chikungunya in West Darfur, where nearly 250 people have been diagnosed with this viral disease.
The worst disease and the most lethal disease is, in fact, malaria. There's over 1.1 million malaria cases as of the end of September this year across the country. And malaria has reached epidemic levels in 15 out of the 18 states in Sudan.
Laerke says UN aid agencies have procured hundreds of emergency health kits to support malaria treatment and other health needs. He says the kits can serve up to 2.7 million people for 3 months. However, he tells VOA, aid workers are having difficulty getting the supplies out into the field.
One of the things that the partners on the ground are actually mentioning, trying to get these emergency health kits out in the communities, and particularly among the many internally displaced people, there's almost 2 million internally displaced people in Sudan, is that the floods and the stagnant water is still hampering access to those people.
Laerke says there is a shortage of medical supplies and needs will increase as insect-driven diseases continue to spread throughout the country. He says the UN's operation is in financial difficulty as it only has received 19% of needed funding. He says aid agencies urgently need to raise an estimated $25 million to procure essential medicines and to support measures for vaccine-preventable vector and waterborne diseases. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Nigerian professionals condemn the killing of protesters. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you reward yourself?
I'll go and buy myself maybe a pair of shoes I always desire to get. I'll go and have a meal I always desire to get. Or anything. Depends on what I've achieved.
By spoiling myself. I'm a girl. I go buy myself clothes, shoes, do my hair, my nails. Basic things that will make me look good and happy at the end of the day.
I cook a good meal. I sit down with a chill drink.
My work involves very hard work, so I get very tired. So I reward myself once every month. I do that by swimming and relaxing at the beach with my family.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linar Mudu. The World Health Organization and the Africa Centers for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, Talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Despite weeks-long protests against police brutality in Nigeria taking a dramatic turn this week with the shooting of protesters in the country's economic capital, Lagos, thousands of young citizens of the West African nation continue their call for change. Protester demands had quickly expanded to include government reforms and youth inclusion in Nigeria's politics. But the increasing tension had led to authorities imposing bans and curfews against protests in many states. For VOA News, Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Amnesty International released the latest figure in a statement Wednesday night, citing evidence from witnesses. The group also says Nigerian authorities must be held responsible for killing their own people. Sheun Bakari is a program manager at Amnesty International.
Amnesty International stands by its position that more than 50 people have been killed in different parts of the country since the protest started. These shootings amount to extrajudicial executions. And we have said previously that there must be an immediate investigation and suspected perpetrators must be held accountable through fair trials.
Lagos authorities have yet to release any new updates on casualties. The shooting incident happened Tuesday at the Lekki toll gate in Lagos. On Wednesday, State Governor Babajide Sanwo-Olu, who visited victims in various hospitals, said only one person had died from head trauma, contradicting Amnesty's position on the issue. Until now, no authority has claimed responsibility for the shooting, including the army. But the governor, who had earlier stated that it was beyond his power to command the military, says it has launched a further investigation.
That no sitting governor controls the rules of engagement of the military. I have nonetheless instructed an investigation into the ordered and adopted rules of engagement employed by the officers and men of the Nigerian Army that were deployed to the Lekki toll gate last night.
Thousands of Nigerian youths marched through the streets recently, demanding that a notorious police unit called SARS, or Special Anti-Robbery Squad, be dissolved over allegations of torture and killings of citizens. Despite President Muhammadu Buhari disbanding the group days after protests, the demonstrations continued. The protesters expanded their demands to include calls for police reforms and good governance. After the protests turned violent, Lagos authorities responded by imposing a 24-hour curfew. But protesters defying state orders remained at the Lekki tollgate before the shooting started. Security expert Ebenezer Oyetakin says protesters who had no one to represent them frustrated the government's negotiations. He says they were becoming too ambitious with their demands.
To the best of my knowledge, the sound has been very loud and clear, and gains have been made by the protesters. The ENSAS disaster has been ended. All other legitimate demands that they made can be looked into through negotiation, but the protesters made a strategic error by not identifying spokesperson or front that can engage government.
The killing of protesters drew international criticism, with the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres among many notable people who have cautioned Nigerian authorities. For the moment, the streets of major cities like Lagos and Abuja, where protests initially started, were largely calm and empty on Thursday. Many of the Nigerian states are adopting curfews and bans on protests to prevent any further breakdown of law and order. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
New rapid coronavirus testing, soon to be available throughout Africa, could be a game changer for the continent. That's according to World Health Organization. But health officials from across the continent note that the new testing regime comes with new protocols and raises the possibility of finding more cases on the continent that so far has shown a relative low case. Anita Paul reports from Johannesburg.
Millions of new rapid tests for coronavirus are being rolled out across Africa, a move that could be a game changer by helping health workers identify and treat cases. Dr. Matsidiso Moeti is the World Health Organization's Regional Director for Africa.
This would be a game changer, we think, in the fight against COVID-19. These high-quality rapid tests will help meet the huge unmet need for testing in Africa. While there are testing challenges in many parts of the world, we've seen that African countries have faced a significant gap throughout the pandemic. For example, Senegal has significantly boosted its testing capacity, but it still has testing 14 times less than the Netherlands. Nigeria is testing 11 times less than Brazil.
Unlike the currently used polymerase chain reaction, or PCR, tests, these tests don't require labs for processing. They're also cheaper and don't rely on expensive, fragile reagents, like the PCR tests do. The new tests seek specific proteins called antigens on the surface of the virus and can yield results in under 30 minutes without needing to be sent to a high-tech lab. As a result, the new tests can also be deployed to rural clinics, allowing health systems to find cases outside of major population centers. But, notes Dr. Susan Ndida Nabata, head of Uganda's National Health Laboratory Services and Central Public Health Laboratory, the new tests aren't a complete replacement. The rapid tests are designed to detect fairly high levels of antigens, meaning people who are in the early stages of infection may falsely test negative. Since the pandemic took off in March, the sub-Saharan African region has seen 1.2 million confirmed cases, among the lowest caseload on the planet. Nabata says that more widespread testing could see those numbers rise.
That we have good quality, more quality tests, which will increase access to testing, and we might see more numbers coming on board. I heard from Guinea that when they started use of the RDT, their testing numbers went up and the identification of cases also went up. So I think that it could be one of the causes that we are seeing, that we are not seeing a number of cases in Africa as compared to the developed countries.
And Moeti says that's all the more reason to maintain vigilance in sub-Saharan Africa.
The region has experienced a downward trend from a daily average of more than 15,000 cases in July to less than 4,000 in the past month. But in the past couple of weeks, this decline has slowed down to a plateau. As countries ease restrictions on movement, some increases in cases are expected, but preventing an exponential rise is absolutely critical.
Better testing and stronger health systems play a big role in the fight, she said. But so do ordinary people. To that end, she repeated her guidance. Wear masks, keep your distance, and wash your hands. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Witnesses say Cameroonian police have chased and beaten at least 200 opposition supporters outside the home of opposition leader Maurice Kamto, who has been under de facto house arrest for over a month. Anti-riot police were deployed to Kamto's home this week to contain crowds of supporters demanding he be released. Police blocked Kamto from leaving his house after he organized anti-government protest in September. Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
An unknown female supporter of opposition leader Maurice Kamto stripped off her clothes in front of his house Thursday and shouted at the large police presence that his months-long detention was illegal. The woman, in her early 50s, screamed that she would not leave until police allowed Kamto out of his house to speak with her. She was one of over 200 opposition supporters gathered outside Kamto's house to mark 1 month since police surrounded his home, placing him under de facto house arrest. Kamto supporter Giselle Malongo says she came from the western town of Bafoussam to ask why Kamto has been stopped from leaving his house since September 22.
Nous n'avons pas pu rencontrer le professeur Maurice Kamto, le président national.
She says the police violently brutalized and blocked supporters from meeting Kamto, a man she calls their president.
Malonga says armed police seized mobile phones from supporters who tried to take photographs of the clashes. She says police also prevented them from delivering food donations to Kamto and his family. A reporter also witnessed police beating and blocking Kamto's supporters, some of whom were trying to donate food. Christopher Ndong is Secretary General and legal advisor of Kamto's Cameroon Renaissance Movement Party. He says police beat 13 supporters so badly that they had to get treated at a hospital.
Kamto was very furious at this gesture by the military, refusing people to come and give him food. After he has been locked up for a month, there was a lot of hot exchanges. We decry the attitude of government and its military operatives. We are saying this is, in fact, an infringement to democratic principles and democratic rights.
Cameroon police gave no official statement on the clashes and would not answer a reporter's questions. Authorities have not officially declared Kamto to be under house arrest, but police have not allowed him to leave his home since he organized nationwide anti-government protest in September. Cameroon Territorial Administration Minister Paul Atanganji says police are watching Kamto because he is being investigated for hostilities against the state.
I want to sound a stern warning to unscrupulous politicians that they will face the law. It must be clear that the discontinuance of legal proceedings does not imply that the charges have been dropped. Any further act of public disorder will take them back to square one.
The September opposition protests were against Cameroon, holding December 6 regional elections. The opposition says the electoral laws favor long-ruling President Paul Biya and his Cameroon People's Democratic Movement Party. Biya has been in power for 38 years, making him one of Africa's longest-serving leaders. Kamto and about 200 supporters were jailed last year for protesting against the 2018 presidential election results, which named Biya the winner. Kamto was released after 9 months following international pressure. Since then, Cameroon police have closely monitored his activities and all of his political rallies and protests have been declared illegal. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon. Before we end this show, I have a special announcement for you. This program can now be heard in South Sudan at 7:30 local time on VOA affiliate stations. Please inform your relatives and friends. That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now leave you in a dancing mood with the song Sapa by Awilo Longomba.
Il était comment? Mobali ayaya, bien coiffé, bien rasé, bien parfumé, n'a pas griffé à somme. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Nom de Dieu, docteur, chef, j'adis les têtes.
Yoga, yadis, tombo, bolino, elisa, n'a soto, n'a pas, soto, y'a pas griffé, soto, y'a pas.
We have been listening to Awilo Longomba with the song Sapa. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and please wear a mask if you must leave your house. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.